League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello, welcome back, everybody, to another year of the Sunday Podcast.
I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Back in 2025 for our fifth season. You can expect more of this.
He's claiming that he was ill before the semifinal, whatever. But, you know, I just feel like at that point he was just looking for attention.
And some of this.
Well, you normally say no human is limited. So I can't limit myself, or I can't just say I can do.
As well as event coverage around all the major races on the UK circuit.
And if you're a fan of the pod, please give us a rating and review on your preferred podcast streaming service.
And if you want to stay up to date with all the latest news, give us a follow on Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
As always, thanks for listening. See you next time. And we hope you enjoyed the episode.
Okay, happy new year, guys. Welcome back to the Sunday Plod. We are back after a bit of a break. So Matt and I had a chance to chill out a bit. But some good guests coming up, don't we, mate?
We do indeed. And speak for yourself. We're chilling out, mate. I officially moved house. So and it's a bit chaos at the moment. It's a bit of a building site. So wasn't too much relaxing for me over the festive period. But no, good to be back. And I think, yeah, this weekend, I mean, we basically had, I think the festive period's always a little bit quiet with competitions and stuff. But already, you know, it's Valencia. And then we've got some indoor meets coming up. And before you know it, it's European indoors, world indoors, and the summer season.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. And I guess just to break it down for you guys as listeners, plan for the pod this coming year is to bring you much of the same, really, in terms of our usual guest content and event coverage, but hopefully make it a bit easier for you guys to digest. So making sure that we keep those bonus episodes up and give yourselves lots of kind of smaller episodes to listen to throughout the week to stay in touch with the sport.
That's exactly it. And I think, like I said, breaking those episodes down, just going to allow you guys to get straight to the episodes or the guests that you want to listen to. So, for example, get things going with Dean Miller today. We'll just keep it less of us chit-chatting, a little bit more old school format. And then we'll be bringing out an episode Monday, getting to reviewing that Valencia, because we could see a British record in the 10K, buddy. On the men's side, I mean, Jack Rowe in fine form, 28 lows at Telford. Rory Leonard as well, also in good form. Mark Scott's doing it. And Alex Yee as well, who his London Marathon announcement is something that I'm sure we're going to discuss in much more detail as the kind of weeks and months go by leading up to that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we said, we'll keep the chit chat to a minimum, but into this Dean Miller episode, mate. And well, great to chat to him, like just coming off that Liverpool race and that Eurocross, sorry, as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Birmingham University are doing something so right. They're absolutely nailing it. I think the numbers there, 10, yeah, I think it was 10. From Birmingham University represented the Eurocross, and just their performance in Liverpool as well, how they prepared for that as a uni, I think was fascinating. And the role that Dean Miller's basically forged at Birmingham University as well, because, you know, we know Luke Gunn used to kind of have that role a few years ago, and Dean Miller's now kind of stepped up as Luke Gunn's moved on to director, and then Jethro McGraw and all the other coaching staff who are involved in that setup. And it's tough. Like right now, if you're another British university or even American university, like to compete with, I guess, the results that they're churning out is difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dean goes into great detail around what that Birmingham setup looks like. So any kind of prospective university students out there, this might be a good one for you to listen to. And of course, those of you interested in listening to coaches as well, talking about his approach and how that varies with different athletes. Because I think university coaching, as of course you know, Matt, is one of them ones where you're balancing a fine role between being, I guess, the primary coach for a lot of athletes, but also facilitating athletes who have different coaches from around the UK, ensuring that they do the training to the best of their ability as well.
And I think that's what Birmingham are nailing right now. Yeah, you think about, yes, they've got some superstars who are like Tamer and David Stone, etc., and many more who are working under Dean, but then they've also got people like, you know, your Barnacos who aren't. And are working with remote coaches, and I think they just do a fantastic job, and they have the time to do it as well, and they have the staff to do it, and they have the setup to do it, you know, and be communicating with those home coaches as much as possible. So they've got that on their side, but you still have to execute, and yeah, they're certainly doing that.
Yeah, of course they are. So look, we'll hand over to Dean. Enjoy this episode, and we'll catch you guys early next week for a Valencia roundup. Thanks for listening, as always. Okay, firstly, Dean, just welcome to the podcast. Great to have you on. You just mentioned you've been pretty busy the past couple of weeks, so thanks for finding the time.
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me. It's always nice to get a call up. I think me, Luke, and Jeff, one of our other coaches, joked while we're in Turkey that you guys might come calling. Yeah, it was nice to get the message, and I know our guys are in Birmingham are excited. So yeah, it's been a busy few weeks. Certainly a successful few weeks. Like, really excited for Christmas. But yeah, I can't complain really, because it's surpassed our expectations in terms of what we wanted to do, so which is good.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. And where do we start? Should we start with Liverpool or Euros? Because we kind of wanted to ask, as a coach, which was more special? Which was the big one, I guess, for you?
I don't know. I think they were both pretty good. And I think, in terms of my role and the role at the university is pretty 24/7 sometimes with the program here and kind of coaching. But I think I'd actually said to Luke Gunn, who's the head of athletics here and my boss, and I know you've had him on the pod before quite a while ago, I think. I said to him about 5 weeks ago, I said, I'm dropping the ball on everything that isn't the guys getting ready for Liverpool. We knew that we had quite a few guys that were in a good spot. And you know, Matt, yourself, how often do you have that perfect day where everything comes off as a coach? Like, very rarely. But yeah, we were quietly confident that we knew something might happen at Liverpool. So to see it come off, I think you probably saw with the amount of social media craziness and stuff that kicked off afterwards, that there were some runs there that probably domestically people were aware of that we were probably quietly confident of. But yeah, to see them then come off in that scale, because we know how emotional Liverpool is and how everyone gets around that race. It's the big race of the 12 months, isn't it? Which sounds strange, but it is. It's the one that everyone believes they've got a shot in. So I think that was probably, yeah, that was probably the most exciting day. You're able with Euros to then have those 2 weeks to kind of go, right, those guys are in the team now, let's get them ready. And if you make a British team, you've always got a chance, haven't you? So.
Well, this was it. And the way Liverpool sets up, it was just kind of race after race after race, where you obviously had someone of interest and someone performing from the uni and someone you possibly even coached as well. I can just imagine, just as the day goes on, it just getting better and better and better. How were you able to stay composed? Because presumably in between races, you would maybe have some final words with athletes. Was that difficult for you, or was it just kind of like feed off the energy and the results that were unfolding?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting one. You're right. I think the day is so back to back, especially we've got so many numbers at Birmingham, and I think in terms of those maybe key conversations around guys that I maybe personally lead on, I'd worked out that it was maybe, like, we know it's always a romanticised figure. Everyone stands on the start line thinking they've got a chance, but I genuinely thought I had maybe 8 or 9 guys that had a shot of maybe going to Turkey. So, yeah, and I know I'm quite an emotional guy as well, so I'm not always the best in those instances around playing that poker face. It's something I've certainly learned as a young coach. I think if you'd had me there 3 years ago at Liverpool, 3-4 years ago, like, probably would have been a different scene. But yeah, because I spent most of the day out on the course, I'd had those key conversations, like, probably the Monday, Tuesday beforehand. And actually, I think, David's a good example. Like, on the day, all I said to David was the cue that you need to be present today for the first time ever. So when he came around the first corner leading, I think it was Sam Charlton, who's at Leeds Beckett, shouted to me, "What have you done to David?" Because I don't think he'd ever got out in a race like that. But yeah, it's just picking those moments, isn't it? But yeah, it was a pretty back-to-back day, and me and Luke were both pretty fried by the end of it. But yeah, I didn't have much opportunity to have those conversations on race day. But I don't think you can do much on the day. It's just picking one or two, like, key phrases or key words that you want to get across, I think.
And you mentioned that you kind of said to Luke, what, five weeks ago, that you really needed to focusing on Liverpool, and you mentioned yourself then that 8 or 9 that truly could make the team. How often are you having those discussions with those 8 or 9? Are you talking to them 5 weeks out and saying you're in with a shot here, or is this you in your mind kind of working out what that kind of team might look like?
Yeah, I think every athlete's different, so you've got to play it slightly differently. If you tell someone that they've got a chance of making a team, for some athletes, and it fries them, and they're like, and then it becomes all about that. And yeah, I think you've got to play it very differently with each athlete. As we said, it's quite an emotional day, Liverpool, for some, because everyone feels that they've got that. And you can even see that within some people's racing. You can almost see their race has already gone to pot because you can almost see the top six going away. And so, yeah, I think it's... And the other thing is, and we'll probably talk around this around the Birmingham setup, I think that we've got a pretty good measure of when we feel someone's in shape because our group is so deep here. So it's not like you're there with a group of 10 and the person who's leading your group of 10, you're going, oh, they've got a shower. We actually felt the under 23 men, we probably had 6 or 7 guys that could make the team. So like if the guys that are leading those sessions are doing the work around the sessions, then they're probably going to be nationally there. Like it probably shows. I don't know if, yeah, I'm sure you guys looked at Telford at the weekend. I think we had 7 guys rate 29.40, like around that under 23. So it is like a bit of a numbers game at the moment. And so it means that we are pretty well informed, which is maybe why like we're a little bit quiet beforehand and we don't need to send people to Cardiff, or we're almost waiting to game day to just execute the race plan, right? If that makes sense. Yeah. Does that? Yeah.
Yeah, it does. I think absolutely. And yeah, geez, I didn't even realize I'll put two and two together with the Telford results as well. So just huge strength in depth. Oh, yeah. I was going to say, yeah, was there any sessions where you get the measure on them at all? But it sounds like it was just the overarching, you know, the way you've got so many people together and you know if so-and-so's keeping up with so-and-so, they're running well. Does it, I think with university training and stuff, was it ever, you know, having so many people around that level, does it ever get toxic? Do you ever see that unfold? And what I mean by toxic, do you feel like some people, they would be better in a different situation or a different environment?
It's hard. It's always the balance, isn't it? Where do you focus on the group and the culture, or do you focus on the individual? That is our biggest, I'll call it a blind spot because I'm acknowledging it. But I always think it is the fine balance in university, and that as a university coach, you kind of straddle this weird world that, yeah, I do have an opportunity to get people in teams and maybe even take people onto pro deals, but also I'm there to provide a university athletics experience for lots of people. So it's always a real fine balance. But yeah, I think instinctively, we can kind of see what's going on within our group, and we've created a pretty good culture where it hasn't just been this year that it's happened. I think if you go back and look at probably the Bucks cross country result just out of lockdown, where I think the men won the short course race, the B race, whatever you want to call it, the boys were pretty dominant, and that was probably the first time we thought, oh god, we're doing something here, and everyone wanted to compete for us. It probably took a little bit longer to get the more performance end right. I think me and Luke reflected on that we'd spent so much time building the culture and team that probably a few of those higher performance athletes not necessarily suffered, but we maybe looked at Leeds talent hub and thought they were better at dealing with those real kind of top end guys, but maybe didn't have the sheer numbers. And I feel like I think that's what myself and Luke have always been good at, admitting when we've got stuff wrong, and trying to make a change. And you may be seeing the starts of that we do have a real focus on those performance guys, but we're still trying to keep that kind of very kind of positive team culture, and that people want to compete for us. I don't know, I've gone off on tangents there. To answer your actual question, when you speak about some of the boys around getting an inkling around Liverpool, it was hard because Thomas, David, Will, Kate Willis as well, they're all in Fontenoy for 5 weeks. So, I mean, we were speaking to them daily, and Hannah was out there for a little bit of time. So you couldn't directly correlate them to what, and particularly David, you're so blind because he'd done so little the last couple of years. But you know he's got star quality. So if you get him onto the start line, he can do good things. So there's always that little bit of unsureness. But yeah, it was nice that it came off on the day.
Yeah, we'll get on to David because that's a special story there in itself. But I think you mentioned the depth there and that almost coming first. I almost feel like, I mean, you'll know as well, does it not have to? Because I feel like once you get that right, then the performers, they just end up driving the performance side anyway. And some of the performers like David, like Kate, they come from that big bulk, that big depth of people anyway.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it sets the tone culturally. So if you came and saw a session, Matt, you'll know with being out of university and probably having a bigger group and stuff, and probably getting the intensity management of sessions right, teaching people to train the right ways and not kill themselves all the time. That I think it kind of breeds confidence in what we do. If you came and watched a session at Birmingham and saw the 50 guys run around Metchley together, like sometimes Tom Eyre is in the third or fourth group. And for a while, the lads were kind of like, well, I'm in better shape than him. Why does he keep doing this? But actually now the tone is, God, he's happy of looking pretty average in sessions, but the context is that he's running 100 mile a week, and that when he tones stuff down and tapers, then he gets it right. So it almost breeds itself that you've then got all these guys becoming really sensible in training and doing the right things, because they're going, God, he's taking the leap of faith and looks what's happening. So yeah, you get the group right, you then have some success in that, and then it feeds back into the group, I think.
Yeah, agreed. I think it's very difficult to focus on the top end and really prioritize that and have a group around it. I think, yeah, almost like you said, Birmingham, over the last few years, you focus on the depth, the group, and then it helps those high achievers, because if you just constantly focus on those high achievers, I think, like you said, you then the group doesn't kind of catch on, and it's just too separated. There's too much distance between them.
Yeah, yeah, without doubt.
Mm. And speaking, I guess, of that top end, 10 athletes from Birmingham made a team for the Euros. You went out there as well as a coach. How many of those were you individually coaching as well?
So yeah, four. So like, I think that was lovely, like in terms of that I managed quite a big coaching team in Birmingham, and that's how we can do it. I'm sure again we'll speak around that, but yeah, there was 10 there, like four of them that I kind of like lead on the coaching and program for, in terms of Tomer, David, Kate and Jess. Obviously, Jess Bailey's just transitioned to Birmingham, but she is from my hometown and my dad was pretty involved in her coaching beforehand. So it's probably been an easier transition than what it probably looks like. But yeah, then, Luke obviously coaches Poppy, Jeff Rowan McGraw, who you guys will probably know or be aware of. He's an unbelievable young coach. Coaching Tyler Billiard. And then there's three or four guys that, and it's the beauty of our environment and what we've tried to create. There's three or four guys there that are coached from outside our environment. I spend most of my week on the phone too. So obviously I know you've had Tim on the podcast, Tim Eglin, coaches Will Barnico. And yeah, I guess I'm Will's assistant coach on the ground, but spend a lot of the time making sure Tim's plans are kind of linked up with the boys here and stuff. But yeah, I think that's how the Birmingham environment works with such big groups. And actually me and Luke as young coaches a few years ago, like, kind of said like, look, we don't know that much, we're still learning ourselves. So I think examples like Tim that have come into our environment, bought into what we've done, have been good mentors for us as well.
Hey, I mean, how do you manage that personally as a coach? You've got athletes that you're working directly with, you have 100% kind of control over what they do, but then you've also got athletes like you said, like Barnico, like I'm sure Tyler links in, and the girls side as well, that you are having to liaise with and try and make decisions, I guess, on the ground for what's best is them, when you're kind of watching over them as well. That must be quite difficult to juggle the two and not prioritize, I guess, those athletes.
It's hard, and that's the balance, and probably why my week is sometimes a little bit 24/7. I wouldn't change it, because you know Matt, coaching's addictive, and I do it because I love it. I'm very fortunate. Yeah, I guess most of my week is spent around like kind of working out individual plans. Yeah, Brett Rushman, for example, who was that third scoring under 23, he's coached by Hobdell. So spend a little reasonable amount of time like getting Andy's plans and then see how they link up. I think the nature of, and we come back to the numbers at Birmingham and what we built, is that we always say, regardless of what you're doing or where your fitness is or what event group you are or your plans, there's always someone to run with because of the sheer numbers here. So I guess I try and be that glue that tries to link everyone up. It's not always the easiest thing. And it does take a bit of time. I'm very reliant on a coaching team that work together. We do not work in silo. I think sometimes people assume Birmingham is all Luke or all me, but it really isn't. Like, I think that is our biggest coaching isn't values enough in this country. I'm probably going down a bit of a different rabbit hole there. I'm sure there's hopefully a few coaches listening, but it isn't. We've got away for years by undervaluing coaches and relying on that volunteer mentality of just doing everything because we love the sport. But yeah, that's where I'm still probably my biggest fear and gap is for our environment, that we've probably got up to like 9 coaches but lots of volunteers that I'm probably demanding more of than what they're actually getting, but they're doing it because they love it. And I'm aware I'm in an incredibly fortunate position that I've that I'd built a team of 9 coaches where not many other places have that. But I don't think I should be feeling like that, because if you went to football or a different sport, very average football coaches would just be getting half decent salaries. Does that make a bit of sense?
Absolutely, man.
Yeah. And let's chat about kind of that setup, because your role is the co-coordinator of endurance, is that right?
Yeah, I think the title at the moment is endurance manager. It changes in different guises, but so endurance manager at the moment. So yeah.
Yeah, and what exactly does that look like then? You've talked about kind of you're working as a team, you're not in silos. Luke's obviously director of athletics, and we've had him on, yeah, like you said, quite a while ago now. So what is, I guess, on paper, what is the Birmingham setup coaching-wise, and then how does that kind of come to fruition?
Yeah, it's probably good to give context for people that don't know our setup too well. Luke is like actually head of performance at UB Sport now, so across all sports. So he's still head of athletics as part of that role, like a couple of days a week. But then as part of that, he's one of my coaching team as well. Under him as head of athletics, and myself and Jade Sermon. Jade is my equivalent on the non-endurance side of things. So she's a multi-events coach, so she looks after anything that isn't the stuff that we like, basically. So yeah, and then I kind of manage that endurance program. And that links into some of the Talent Hub stuff and some of the JTPS TP stuff, but mainly the university endurance program. So we have, like at the moment, like nearly 180 runners here at all different levels, from your Barnacokes, your Izzy Boffies, your Abby Ives, your Jess Baileys, your Ollie Dustins, right through to guys that are turning up to university wanting to do their first park run. We offer some form of training every day, depending on what you need and where you are. But then I'm constantly trying to upskill like new coaches and young coaches. So there's that endurance coaching team that I kind of manage. Myself leading is Luke and Jeff are other two names you know. But then there's another 3 or 4 coaches there that are kind of pretty integral in the week that maybe either voluntary or paid for some kind of limited hours in the week for those coaching hours. Our physiologist, who's so integral, you guys will probably hear me reference him loads, Dave Sheldon. Like, he's pretty much my assistant coach. He's an ex-Loughborough boy himself, books finalists of 15, so got a good experience within the sport, but he's come over to us and actually he's very much my assistant's coach. So most of the guys that I like coach will work pretty closely with him, and we do. I would say I'm more of an artist as a coach, but he brings a little bit of science and a bit of why you're doing this. And he's probably been quite a big change with us, that he comes into those coaching meetings when we're sat trying to create a general plan for 180 people, which is pretty tough. You'll know, Matt, with having a university group, you create something generally and everyone's wanting to do slightly different stuff. But Dave does bring that kind of challenge to, like, why are you doing it like this? Have you thought about this? And that's probably where some of the changes come the last few years and just some of those tweaks we've made. But then I guess we've got 3 or 4 young coaches that I'm upskilling. Like, if we see like some people wanting to coach, we don't shut the door. I think sometimes there's always been a theme of the coach in certain communities being the dictator, or it's all about them. And like, I think to use the example of Bud, mine and Luke's old coach, who is Mr. Birmingham University, if he'd shut the door on me and Luke coaching or not wanted us involved because he wanted to still coach back in the day, then we probably wouldn't be in this situation. So, Mike, I know you've worked with a couple of my cross captains and Michael Stevens and Ellen, but like 3 or 4 of my previous cross country captains are now coaching within our environment at a pretty low level, being there on the ground, starting to help a few of the community guys. But I think that's the way we thrive when there's more bodies on the ground.
I think you're dead right. I think with the amount of, I say, athletes you got, you can't watch all of it. You've only got 2 sets of eyes. But, you know, one thing I wanted to say is it's clear that Birmingham University as a whole values sport and they value athletics and endurance running. And clearly that's a large part of how, you know, funding and stuff comes from for you guys to have such a grand scale. But also, how has things changed since Birmingham became that talent hub? What was it, just pre-COVID or just after COVID? Because has that allowed you to professionalize that top end a little bit more at the university and have a little bit more funding and scope to work with individuals?
Yeah, I think so. Like, yeah, well, even down to my role, I retired pretty early myself through injury and was working like locally in a school, and Bud had dragged me back into coaching because his health wasn't great. I was probably a bit disillusioned with the sport, but I started helping a few guys on the ground at a real low level and actually found that I've loved it and wanted to get more involved. So I took a bit of a leap of faith from my job and at the time, and knew that the Talent Hub funding was coming in, and was able to almost start that role. It doesn't look like what it looks like now. I've probably had to earn that. I think the role was a day and a week paid, and I've got a very forgiving partner who has bankrolled me for the last few years, and I've kind of just been a crazy athletics nut that has spent too much time doing it. But I think the funding in the beginning and what we are now, it does allow us to do a little bit more and support those guys at the top. It does give us a little bit more flex, and I guess, as I said, my blind spot, well, not blind spot, because I'm acknowledging it, is that the depth of our group is so much that guys can come in that could probably go other places and get scholarships or whatever that means. And it's just making sure we kind of cater for those now. Like really good guys that could be the next Tom Tarragano or the next Kate Willis that didn't come in as superstars that have rose through our environment. And it's just making sure we're set up for those. But it certainly has give us more opportunity to build the staffing, which is probably a starting point.
Yeah. And of course, you mentioned that staffing kind of stretch into physiologists and things like that. At what point in kind of, and I know it doesn't always work like this, but you mentioned kind of 180 athletes, right? At what point along that continuum of fastest to slowest do you get to access things like the physiologist, nutrition, maybe that top end stuff?
It's a good question. And that's always my challenge to the university, that as well, I think I said to them a few weeks ago that we're creating athletes at a quicker rate than you can support them at the moment. And that is always with that number of people, how we do that. It's a tricky one, because what I'd say, those physiologists and S&C coaches we have, we will have some of their time through the Talent Hub, but they are working across all programs, like with scholars from other sports as well. And we're lucky that Dave is a physiologist, is in athletics, and that's his sport, so we probably get a bit more time from him. But yeah, in terms of, I think in terms of like top tier scholars at the university, athletics has more than any, but that sits at like 8 or 9. And so to give you an example, Tom Ayer isn't on top tier scholarship. Tyler isn't. And that's just where things sit at the moment. Like that's kind of for consistent GB senior international. So you kind of Barnacotes, Jeff sits on that and stuff. But I do manage a program of another 30 endurance runners under that program is funded towards our books points total. And those guys probably are the guys that either make a Eurocross or making England teams. And most of those guys that you think, why the hell are they not on scholarship? They kind of sit within that program, and it is pretty comprehensive, that package, in terms of like physiology, S&C, physio, a little bit more access here and there. And then under that, it's almost trying to trickle that down to the rest of the group. We do think, even without that performance support, the university package at Birmingham is pretty comprehensive. It's not that if you're not within those top tiers, you're getting nothing. We usually find that those come in without anything. They move through the tiers because they're around that environment, and the actual club training still hits a lot of those things.
Yeah. I mean, just for people listening, you're talking about scholarships there, and obviously they'll have, some people might have offers and interest to go over to the NCAA. What is Birmingham, you know, that top tier? You mentioned the stuff it includes, but financially, what does it include for a student?
Yeah, like, I don't think we can look to necessarily compete with the NCAA. So I really don't. And in terms of a financial package, so I think our unique selling point is that we are a community, and we put community for, like, that we always say we're a community with performance, that you can come and be a performance athlete here and get better, but actually, like, we genuinely care. And I'm not saying NCAA coaches don't care, because I know a lot of really good coaches and a lot of good programs and a lot of people having a great time, a lot of people doing well. But I think that is the Birmingham way, that like, my philosophy as a coach, it's come from Bud, is that I don't really care how well people are running, as long as they're happy and as long as they're okay. So we try and intertwine that with what we're doing. Obviously, like, there does become a performance element, and we want to do well, but... I think that's what we've got going for us. And I don't think we're the only place in the UK. Like, I think Kyle's a good friend at Loughborough, and he's trying to do similar, and they're in a rebuilding phase. And actually the first year group that he's got now, he's got some talented kids and they'll come good again because they are Man United, aren't they? They will. He's doing good things there and it'll just take a bit of time. But I think our unique selling point is that we can't throw loads of money at it. But hopefully we're a community and we care. Yeah, I was saying I wound Tom Ayer up after Turkey because he's trying to work out what to do next year. And he's got a few different options on the table, but around what that maybe looks like next year. And actually, if you look at Birmingham as a starting point, I remember ringing him as a sixth former the first year I recruited and convincing him that Birmingham was maybe the place for him over the States. Matt being the running nerd, you probably know a few of the guys, but like his training group and coach were, they've got a like history of guys coming to Birmingham and doing pretty well. So like Will Gray, Ian Crowright. It was just a bit of a whim. I got it. He messaged me as a sixth former and said, I'm thinking about going to the States now. So I rung him. Certainly didn't make it all about coming to Birmingham, but reminded him how well guys had gone. And you look back and you think of those conversations. It was similar with Will. I remember me and Luke sitting with Will and his parents and trying to sell him the dream as two young coaches, and they took a chance on us. If those two conversations don't go right, then what does Birmingham look like the next few years? Because I guess those two have been Birmingham in terms of endurance the last couple of years. So yeah, I think... people can only come to Birmingham and see if it's right for them. And if they get a feel good, like there's certainly things we're not doing perfect. There's certainly things we're doing well. But I always say, come and see for yourself. And with the States, go and experience it. Just do your research. Not enough people do their research.
Yeah. And how much time are you spending recruiting? Because this is where with the States, we know how much time they spend. We know the budget they have for just recruitment, flying people out or whatever it is. How much time are you spending recruiting? How much of your week or your year is that taking up?
Yeah, a little bit of time. I mean, I haven't had to do much work the last few weeks because
Jerry himself, he's done the work for you.
I can't respond to messages quick enough. I might have to start putting trials on the team or something. No, I joke. But yeah, it is part of the week. But as always, we just try and be really open. And that's, I guess, probably a good sell for today. Like there is lots of good opportunity in the UK, like what you're doing at Oxford, Matt, like the guys at Leeds, yeah, Kyle and his team at Loughborough, there is really good opportunity. There's also a fantastic opportunity in Riches in the States. But in terms of my week, it is part of what I do in terms of like, I don't think I'm as front of house in terms of reaching out to people. I think the US coaches like are quite, that is part of their big remit and it's quite Americanized to be just where the place for you. I don't think we ever try and do that. But a lot of the week is trying to have those conversations if people are genuinely interested and see what we can offer them. As I say, I think a lot of our guys that are performing well at the moment do a lot of the recruitment for me. You'd think some of Will's interviews, you'd think we prepped him with some of that. It hits really organic, like him and Jess and stuff. You're almost going, guys, this is sickening. But like, I think they just sell what we do in Birmingham well. Yeah, hopefully it feels like a team and a family.
Yeah, it certainly helps when you got some high performers, all runners talk as well, don't they? But I'm intrigued to know, you know, as a university and, you know, obviously Luke being your boss and heading up the athletics program as well, what's the kind of end goal? Like, where do you guys want the club to be in sort of maybe 5 years? Because you're already, you know, you are dominating now. And like most universities would aspire and have a goal to be where you are. So kind of how does that next 5 years look? You must be discussing like, goodness, how do we kind of push on and continue to improve?
That's a good question. Yeah, you're right. I think there's always, once you've done something like that and you're keeping your standards quite high, you never want to let them slip. And it does, you guys know the athletics calendar never stops. Partners in the other room thinking, God, what's he doing now? He's like, it just doesn't stop, does it? So you, and BUAC and the University of Birmingham Athletics Club is no different. So we're just trying to keep standards high. We know that performance end is going really well at the moment. We want to keep things up there from a books competition, but it's not all about books. I think probably like the unique situation we've got at the moment, it probably links into why so many of our like guys are starting to go really well, is that we've got a really unique carrot at the moment in that the European champs in 2 years' time is in Birmingham at the Alexander, and we've kind of framed it unofficially as like Project 2026. In that, how many of our guys, can we get in and around the team, like the opportunity to compete at home Europeans with your team in the stadium? So if we speak around like Tom Poppy, David, Will, Tyler, Henry Fisher, a lot of those guys that are kind of like on the periphery and starting to show form, like we've almost kind of said you guys are doing the right thing, and we challenged them a while ago to be like a little bit more professional in what they're doing. I think you guys are seeing that. So I think that 2026 goal is really nice, and it's probably a little bit out of the university sphere, but if we can sit there when the team's announced and think there's one or two of our guys on there, then that would be really cool. But I mean, how hard that is to make a senior outdoor team, it's very different to Eurocross.
Especially with these new selection policies changing every year as well. The indoors is crazy enough as it is. But I'm intrigued. You just mentioned something there. You challenge your guys to be a little bit more professional. And I think that is striking the balance at university sport is difficult, isn't it? Because you talk about there being such a large group, having that balance of professionalism, but also enjoyment and fun is difficult. So in what ways did they need to change and up their game?
Well, I think it's a tricky one, isn't it? You're completely right. It is that balance, because we can't be demanding like absolute professional levels from guys that want to come and enjoy the university experience. Most of our guys will come to University of Birmingham, be in our environment, and maybe make a books team and go on to be pretty good and live still a little like a student. And that's completely fine. That's appropriate. That's what I'm paid to do, to provide that experience. But I think like it comes back to what I said around that books cross-country just out of COVID, when we were like no one had seen us do anything, and we came out and then we looked pretty good, like, and we were like, God, we're gonna do something really good in the summer. And then no one performed in the summer. I think there's a few guys. I think Tom Keane had a good summer, but he'd gone home and wasn't necessarily coached from within our environment. And there's a few guys, but I think what me and Luke had reflected on, we'd created that community and that everyone was in it together, but they were probably having too much of a good time, if that makes sense. Probably the starting point, like, he's going to hate I'll say this, but I always use it. I use it at our training weekend. Like, I think if you go back and look at results from Liverpool maybe 2 years ago, so Tom Ayer, no, 3 years ago, because two years ago he made the team for the first time. 3 years ago, so Tom Ayer's maybe first year as an under-23, finished 48th in that senior race. And we reflected after the race, and I said, well, what do you think? And he said, oh, it was okay. And I said, well, we'd made a bit of a plan to run, I don't know, 60 mile a week this winter. What do you think you've averaged? And he said, oh, it's not great, is it? And he gave me a number, and I said, oh, it was 33 mile a week, buddy. Because you've done a bit of the student life. You've then got to the weekend, tried to race for the club, which has knocked you back a week through illness. And I was like, but you still finished. I think you can go back and look at results a few places behind Tom Keane, who's killing himself, to be really good. I was like, just give me a year and see how good you could be. And you'll know, Matt, how many of those conversations do you have and they just don't come off? People tell you what they want to hear, and then within a few days, they're going through the motions again. I think that's Tom Ayer's super strength, is that he's always, sometimes I do give the perfect delusion of what can happen if you do, but he does take it on board. And it's nothing to do with the train. It's nothing to do with the training or anything special that we're doing here. It's just, he just got a bit serious and started going to sleep and looking after himself. And once one person does that, Tyler Billiard does that and Henry Fisher does that, and then the three or four of them elevate themselves from the rest of the group, and then the rest are looking around, and it kind of creates that culture. And I think that's what you're seeing now, that actually all those guys that were probably on the team probably were living a little bit more professionally, but still with good balance. Like, yeah, I think there's a fine line, isn't there? We're all, the running extremeness in us can be destructive as well. So I know that in myself and my character, that there's me as an athlete, and I'm probably more reflective as a coach when I'm best at balance. But I feel like we've just got the culture right at the moment, that those guys that want to be a bit better know what they need to do, and it feeds down to the group, and that there is still a great culture of social stuff in university sport. But like, there's a clear gap of those that have leveled up and what they're doing. Does that make a bit of sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And like you say, they're just not even dragging each other with them. They're just inspiring each other to want to be more professional. And that's obviously coming from yourself as well. So you're doing a great job there. One person we wanted to ask about was Stone, of course, because he's the one that you look at Para 10. Matt and I obviously did our kind of previews for
Liv. Yeah, I've got to call you out on this.
Yeah.
That was a...
What's that, sorry?
Like, the guys are interested.
Yeah.
Oh, I think you mentioned Will, so well done, guys.
Yeah, you look at someone like him, and where does a performance like that come from? But whilst we know, like, yeah, some consistent training can get you there, when you haven't raced for that long, or you don't race that consistently, what's even keeping you in the sport? You know, that's something that, like, for myself, and I'm sure people listening, like, how are you even interested in running if you're only racing once a year or whatever it is?
Yeah, and I've got to admit, like, it was, like, it's always a surprise when he does that, because it's not the first time he's done it. I think his previous race before that was third at the National Cross, first year out of under 20s. And I think we'd spoken on the phone the night before around him starting in the 40s and maybe trying to work through. So when he texted me and said, I finished third, I think Luke had said, well, who was first and second? And I said, oh, Jack Gray and James Kingston. And he went, no, I mean, in under 20s race. I went, no, David was third in the seniors. So he does surprise us sometimes. And I think some of that is he's got ability, but yeah, like, you're completely right, Ollie, that he's been through the mill with stuff and had a bit of bad luck and some injury, lots of illness and stuff, that something always seems to happen to him. So I do, like, it was only 12 months ago where he just finished his surgery, and again the conversation was bleak, and he could have thrown in the towel several times with me, with our program, with the sport. But I think what he's always been great at is really buying into what we do. And we had no expectation for the last 12 months other than to build from the bottom. He was at starting point of zero. The last surgeries he'd had, we literally had to reset everything. And it was a team effort with our physio, Mike, and with Dave, our physiologist, and Simon, our S&C coach. But we were still talking, probably 12 weeks ago around, if you can get to Liverpool and have a jog round, that'd be fantastic. And we probably both were protecting ourselves in that we knew if we got into the start line, and we knew, like, he does have an ability, like, to race and a bit of something else. Like, he's physiologically got a bit of something that not everyone has. So we're probably protecting ourselves a little bit while keeping expectation low. But yeah, I think, like, he still hasn't done loads and loads, and we just got to protect him now. That was probably the... It's probably the run that, like, got to me the most in terms of, like, in terms of, like, emotion and stuff, and probably why we overreacted at Liverpool because of his run. And because, yeah, he's always been a bit of a needy man. And if you go and speak to his peers and look at results, he's always been there or thereabouts as a young kid, but never quite done it. And actually, we just spoke around, like, even the week of, we were really playing stuff down. We knew he had a shot of making the team. We probably knew he's way more than in the team, but because he'd been in font and because we hadn't raced, we're a bit blind. We said to you, Liverpool is so emotional. And we just talked about taking the emotion out of it and making it really robotic. I think if you look at him race, he looked pretty scary at Liverpool. He's almost just running, like, he's looking at his watch, looking at his splits. He's just thinking robotically, it seems really strange, but as we said, so many people just run with emotion at Liverpool, when actually we knew he was fit enough to just go and run the race, like, which is why he ran away from everyone. Like, he just went and did what he physically knew he could do, rather than thinking about what none of our guys on the day were trying to run for sixth. If you look at the guys that made the team, they all, Kate nearly won the trial, Tom Ed did win the trial, David ran the trial. Like, it was, the line was just take the emotion out of it. So yeah, I didn't really know what he was going to do on the day, but we had a bit of a plan, and it was to quash all the emotion, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I don't think you overreacted. I think what you achieved is pretty incredible, to be honest, at Liverpool. I can't imagine there's too many coaches or setups who have pulled off what you guys pulled off. And I think, you know, it leads on to proving yourself as a coach. When you started out, we haven't talked too much about your early journey. You know, you mentioned you got back involved at Bud's request building. And I'm sure there were a few times through the last 10 years, 5 years, where you've been like, poof, I need a break here. I need to prove to these guys. I need to get some people on board. And was that kind of like a mega moment at Liverpool? But what about the times before that, you know, over the last couple of years where, yeah, you've started working with people like Tamir and David and people like that?
Yeah, I think so. And it's always a little bit of a worry as a young coach, and particularly a coach that has come through Birmingham, where, like, I hope not, but I imagine there's always a bit of an undertone of, oh, well, they've got the athletes at Birmingham, so they're going to do all right. And that's always my biggest fear. I'm always very critical and very, I don't want to ever things to be that way. And so when I started coaching, like I said, I was, my contract at with the hub and stuff was very low level, but I made sure I went and like did some other things. I started coaching West Midlands Schools athletics. I went to the schools. I took on some sixth formers. Me and Hannah run an athletics academy, which still goes on. And very occasionally I'll be coaching javelin on a Wednesday. I felt like if I upskilled myself in those ways I shouldn't be just like becoming a coach because I'd competed for GB a few times and that was in that environment that was taking. I had no right to take on those athletes. And I always pride myself on, I coach too many athletes probably, but I always pride myself on coaching athletes at different points in the pathway. Granted, I need to give a little bit more time to those that are really aspirational now. But yeah, I think there's certainly, I would say like most and how we operate. But I mean, there's been some great coaches that have been awesome to Luke and myself, but particularly myself over the year. Like Mark Viles always bought into what we've done and has been a great kind of confidant and mentor. Tim, we mentioned, obviously Andy Hobbs, all those kind of guys. There's always an undertone of like, yeah, a few coaches when you're a young coach that I don't know if you get it, Matt, that this is the hierarchy. But I'm a people person, so I always try and give people the benefit of the doubt and get to know what they're about without taking it too personally. I'm aware that everyone's got to prove themselves. A probably defining moment of feeling, and I do like regret this and always feel like a bit, yeah, I always look back on it and think I shouldn't have felt like that around it because it's really not about me. But I think when Tom Eyre made the under 23 Eurocross team for the first time 2 years ago, rather than being excited for him, my first thought was relief that I'd actually got someone there. Like, it was pretty good to think about that, but it did feel like, I'd been a few years coaching at the university and was probably sitting in some kind of university coaching circles, but I'd had a few guys make England teams, like, but actually it felt like I'd developed someone, and that's no disrespect to his ex-coach, his old coach at the club, John Clements, who I think is probably the best junior coach in the country that no one will ever know. But unfortunately, my first thought was relief because it felt like at least people feel like I'm a good coach, which I don't know how you guys feel about that. But it's a very different mindset to what I'd normally feel, because normally it's the athlete is always central to me. And so, as I said at the start, I don't care how well they run as long as they're feeling okay.
No, mate, I can imagine that because, you know, I think what's tricky at a place like Birmingham, and it's why I kind of asked the question, is because you get really high achievers turning up as well. So, you know, for them to kind of buy into you and start to trust you, I can imagine would take, you know, quite a few years. And it's just the nature of the sport, isn't it? Everyone judges someone on kind of who they've produced directly, but they kind of overlook the work and the impact you have on so many, even if you don't work directly with them.
Well, it's, and you probably, like, I don't know whether it's misplaced, but unfortunately the tone of, like, for most athletes and the value of whether you're a good coach is if you've got one person running well, which shouldn't be the case. Like, it doesn't matter if I coach 40 athletes and 20 of them have stress fractures, but Tom Eyre wins the trial. So that's what people see, and that's what, like, which is horrendous, isn't it? And isn't shouldn't be a thing. So that's why I think, like, you've got to think about the athlete first, haven't you? And even after Liverpool, I think I spent my Sunday and my Monday prepping our 10 guys and making sure that performance services were set up for the next 2 weeks. On the Tuesday, I was starting the Costa on campus with 8 or 9 of my guys that aren't going through the best time at the moment because they were on my mind. I guess I don't know what I'm really getting at there, but I think the measure of what a good coach is just showing that you care. Like, we can all learn the technical skills or learn some S&C or copy a training session. But I think that's what I've probably learned, and hope what we do well at Birmingham is that, like, I probably had athletes that have had great experiences with me, ones that haven't had the greatest, but hopefully they all say that I cared.
Yeah, and just in terms of, like, going forward, you mentioned Birmingham a lot and the goals for the program a lot, but what about your goals as a coach and where you see it going in the next 5-10 years?
It's a tough one, like, because, yeah, I love being in Birmingham. I'm not sure. I mean, I got to do like things that I wanted to do in the summer with team staff for the Paralympic Games, and which was a bit of a full circle moment for me to be back coaching it on that stage and supporting some of the guys like Ben Sandiland and Luke Nuttall out there in Paris. My partner's in the other room, so I've got to be careful what I say without being too ambitious, but I'm actually pretty content and I'm really happy to be kind of building Birmingham and developing guys here. I feel like I've been incredibly fortunate as a young coach to probably accelerate quite quickly, although maybe if you look at the time spent coaching and the people that I've encountered, maybe I've spent more time than what you realise. No massive aspirations personally other than just to keep Birmingham in a good place. I hope that's not too much of a boring answer.
No, mate, it's a great answer. And I think, does it come from, obviously, so you're a student there as well, like yourself. And when you were competing, you obviously would have competed in Bucks. You were been based at Birmingham when you went to London 2012 Paralympics. And does it just come back to that? I know Matt and I, obviously, we went to Cardiff Met for our uni. And it's a bit of a similar thing in terms of, obviously, Matt's now Oxford, but in terms of the affinity to where you went to university yourself is so strong.
Yeah, I think so. Look, my dad is an ex-steeplechaser and my first coach, and I think I was due to, I don't know why, but I think I'd applied for Sheffield Hallam for university. I think I'd made one GB team at that time, the Paralympic World Champs, as quite a young athlete. I was trying to weigh out what to do, and I think my dad had introduced me to Bud at training get together, one of those big like camps or something, and Bud invited me on campus, and this was, I don't know, I was fresher in 2007, so what are we, 17, 18 years ago now? And I met Bud on campus, and I think he sold me the dream, and I don't think I've ever looked back. And there is some of my decision making is based off probably emotion and affinity to the place now. But I'm still aware I'm incredibly fortunate to be part of the furniture here and doing good things. I've been here 17 years. I got to train out of here, got to do some pretty cool things, and even. With my own retirement early, I've been fortunate where they've allowed me to keep coaching. And yeah, I wouldn't really want to change anything, I don't think.
No, he bleeds Birmingham.
Yeah, something like that. I think, interesting, actually, I don't know if you remember this, I might be misplaced. I'm pretty certain that me and you did our coaching course together. I'm probably catching you off guard there. Like, my last day of my level two was at the Alex. I feel like you were... Yeah,
I did mine there. Yeah, I did mine at Alexander Stadium. I'm
pretty sure we were on the same day. We wouldn't have known each other. Like,
hey, God, I wish I paid more attention. I don't remember myself.
Yeah, there you go.
You learned how to throw javelins instead, weren't you?
Yeah, no. Got put in a beanbag and that kind of stuff.
Like you say, it was quite stressful. We had a big assessment to get done. So, but have you, actually on that, I mean, talk about, you've obviously just gone straight into, you know, working stuff and you've smashed it, but are there areas that you want to develop and get some badges and kind of level up? Because I think when you're involved in an environment like you are and you're doing great things kind of with athletes on the track, you sometimes neglect, I guess, the tick box exercises. But are you still a level two? Are you level three now? Have you gone up?
No, I'm still level two. But I do think some of the best CPD is like the informal stuff, having these kind of conversations and speaking to other coaches. I think that's probably what I'm guilty of. In terms of that, I've been so Birmingham based that, like, to get out to other environments, like, and actually see other things going on, like we, as domestic coaches, we see each other so often at meets and stuff, but how often do we actually go into a different environment and see what's going on? So I think that's probably where I next sit to go and do that stuff. I'm over at Leeds on Thursday with Jess. We're tapping into some services over there, but embarrassingly, like, that's the first time I've ever been over to Beckett, which is crazy.
Yeah, you're right, actually. You know, I think talking with other coaches and stuff goes a long way, doesn't it, in developing programs and seeing how different people operate. I mean, Lum, you know that very well as well with your research.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's like you say, Dean, is when you've got so many coaches working in and around you, though, there's so much to see on your doorstep that who can really blame you for not going further afield sometimes as well, though, because you mentioned you've got nine coaches working with you, you've got Luke working beside you. Like, that's enough in itself to fill up a couple years worth of kind of watching coaching sessions.
Yeah, definitely. I was thinking about this the other day, because I'm very aware that I still have massive gaps in my coaching. I'm still a very young coach, they're still learning, but like the turnover in our university structure, like if we get I know, like 60 to 80 new students every year, maybe coming and going. Like, I don't know how long have I kind of maybe coached at that? Like maybe 6-7 years, there's 300-400 athletes, different scenarios, that turnover, that kind of, like, of, I don't know, a different scenario of training loads, like an injury. How many times do you go through that thing? It's you build experience that way, don't you? And it's easy to go, I'm not that experienced. Then you think, actually, some of the conversations and some of the things that happen week to week are maybe a club coach, if they've got that standard group of 20 athletes where a couple more athletes come every year, it's maybe that kind of experience takes that 20, 30 years. I don't know, maybe. But yeah, probably that's why we're a little accelerated.
You make a really good point there. I think one thing we just want to touch on as well before we finish up, you've spoken a lot about the culture at the club, but I think a lot of people will be just intrigued, you know, what's the training philosophy like? I know, you know, even post-Euros when we were sorting this podcast out, you had a few busy days testing athletes, getting them straight back in the lab and stuff like that as well. Is it fairly scientific? You test athletes, do you use that? What do the programs look like for any kind of future students who want to go to Birmingham?
Yeah, I think it's that fine line we spoke about already, is that every athlete is different, so you want to be individualized, but really you've got so many numbers that you're trying to do it on a general scale. But I think probably the biggest thing at Birmingham is that we're just big on managing training intensity, minimizing injury and keeping people training. And we do want to aerobically develop people, so whether that's like running a little more or cross training a little bit more, like you've got to be aerobically developed in our sport. And I sometimes think that people get hit up on a number, like, oh, that person's running 60 mile a week of one session, and a lot of easy running is very different to 60 mile of four hard sessions, two nights out, like that, like not looking after yourself, not sleeping, training load and training volume are very different, and people get hit up on that number on their Strava at the end of the week. So I think what we're probably doing is that, you know, how often do you try and do a threshold run at university, and you think, God, you guys aren't running a threshold, you're killing yourself, you just want to be front of the group. And I think we've spent a lot of time with Dave and our physiology team of working out what that actually looks like, and you don't need to be great in sessions, and you almost need to be just 6 out of 10. It's 6 out of 10 for most of the week. So yeah, there is an opportunity to run at Birmingham, like to run a decent amount, but we are quite risk averse in how we do it. So I think that's probably what you see, that we're not sending people to races unfit. They almost look like fit when they get there. But we just hopefully have taught them the right way to do it, rather than feeling like they need to hammer sessions all the time. I think Tom Ayres is a good example, actually. I didn't realise this, but we were again doing a talk for the rest of the uni group maybe 18 months ago now, and we went through his training week, and I think he'd missed 2 days of training that year, and he said, oh, well, you know how many times you told me to train hard this year? I said, I don't know. And he said, twice. There's 2 sessions where I told him to go to the well. And I think that's probably like a common theme. It's slightly different for the 8 guys. Like, they need to get after it a little more, like, particularly. But I think as a common theme, we are good at just keeping the calm a little bit.
Yeah. There you go. Great, great place to end, and a great advert for the university as well. But Dean, great to have you on. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It's been awesome. Hopefully I haven't talked too much.
Not at all, not at all.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. Happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.